America faces a puzzling paradox. Since 1955, when psychiatric medications were introduced as revolutionary treatments, mental illness disability rates haven't declined. They've exploded sixfold. Today, 1 in 76 Americans receives disability payments for mental illness, compared to just 1 in 468 in the pre-medication era. Even more alarming, childhood mental illness has skyrocketed 35-fold in just 2 decades. How could this happen during a supposed psychopharmacology revolution? This contradiction launched journalist Robert Whittaker on an investigation that would challenge everything we thought we knew about psychiatric drugs and the chemical imbalance theory that justified their widespread use. Unlike antibiotics, which were developed after identifying disease-causing bacteria, psychiatric medications emerged through serendipity. Thorazine wasn't created to treat schizophrenia. It was discovered when a French surgeon testing an anti-malarial compound noticed it induced euphoric quietude in patients. Hospital staff observed that patients became emotionally neutral with decreased initiative, making wards more manageable. Similarly, the first minor tranquilizers like Miltown emerged when researcher Frank Berger noticed certain antibacterial compounds produced reversible flaccid paralysis in laboratory mice while leaving them tranquil. The first antidepressants came from hydrazine compounds developed for V-2 rockets during World War II that unexpectedly caused tuberculosis patients to become energetic enough to dance in hospital wards. None of these revolutionary psychiatric drugs were developed by identifying specific brain abnormalities. They were accidents during searches for treatments for entirely different conditions, raising profound questions about our understanding of mental illness itself. By the mid-1950s, researchers discovered how psychiatric drugs affected neurotransmitters, spawning a theory that depression stemmed from serotonin deficiency, schizophrenia from excess dopamine, and anxiety from GABA dysfunction. Pharmaceutical companies marketed these drugs as targeted treatments that corrected these imbalances, similar to insulin for diabetes. However, rigorous testing over 15 years failed to support these theories. Studies found no consistent serotonin deficiency pattern in depressed patients. Many with normal serotonin levels experienced severe depression, while others with low serotonin showed no symptoms. Similarly, unmedicated schizophrenics displayed normal dopamine levels. By the late 1980s, the chemical imbalance theory had collapsed scientifically. Kenneth Kendler, editor of Psychological Medicine, concluded, "We have hunted for big, simple neurochemical explanations for psychiatric disorders and have not found them." More concerning was what researchers actually discovered. Psychiatric drugs don't fix chemical imbalances, they create them. NIH Director Steve Hyman explained that these medications create perturbations in neurotransmitter functions, triggering adaptations that cause substantial and long-lasting alterations in neural function, making the brain operate in ways qualitatively as well as quantitatively different from the normal state. If psychiatric drugs don't fix chemical imbalances but instead disrupt normal brain function, what happens to patients who take them long-term? The scientific literature reveals a disturbing pattern. These medications may provide short-term relief while worsening long-term outcomes. Pre-medication era studies showed surprisingly good natural outcomes for schizophrenia. 62% of first episode patients discharged within 12 months, most never relapsing. After antipsychotics became standard treatment, relapse rates increased, with many patients developing a revolving door syndrome of repeated hospitalizations. Martin Harrow's 15-year NIH-funded study provided compelling evidence. While medicated and unmedicated schizophrenia patients showed similar outcomes at 2 years, their paths dramatically diverged afterward. By 4.5 years, 39% of unmedicated patients were in recovery, with over 60% working, compared to just 6% of medicated patients. This gap persisted, with 40% of unmedicated patients in recovery after 15 years versus only 5% of those on medications. Similar patterns emerged with other psychiatric drugs. Long-term benzodiazepine users showed significant cognitive impairment compared to those who discontinued them. For depression, unmedicated patients saw symptoms decrease by 62% in 6 months, while drug-treated patients experienced only 33% reduction. Dutch researchers found 76% of unmedicated patients recovered without relapse over 10 years, compared to just 50% of those taking antidepressants. Before psychopharmacology, manic depressive illness was so rare in children that experts advised against diagnosing it in young patients. Today, bipolar illness affects 1 in 40 American adults, a dramatic increase from its rarity in 1955. This explosion stems from expanded diagnostic boundaries and drug-induced bipolar states. Yale researchers found patients on antidepressants convert to bipolar at 7.7% annually, triple the rate of untreated patients. This jumps to 10-20% annually in young adults and teenagers. Stimulants and antidepressants can trigger manic episodes in children. Research shows 11% of children diagnosed with ADHD developed bipolar symptoms within 4 years of stimulant treatment. With 3.5 million American children on stimulants, this creates approximately 400,000 bipolar youth. Studies reveal 23% of boys treated with Prozac developed mania or manic-like symptoms within 3 months. The medication cascade typically begins with stimulants for ADHD, followed by antidepressants for resulting mood problems, and finally mood stabilizers and antipsychotics when bipolar symptoms emerge, creating what researchers term an iatrogenic epidemic of physician-caused bipolar disorder. How did American psychiatry embrace a care model that worsens long-term outcomes? The answer lies in the transformation of psychiatry in the late 1970s and the powerful coalition that formed to promote biological psychiatry. Facing an existential crisis, psychiatry launched a campaign to re-medicalize itself through DSM-3 in 1980, which identified 265 distinct disorders, despite authors acknowledging most have not yet been fully validated by data. During the 1980s, a powerful alliance formed between psychiatry and the pharmaceutical industry. Drug companies began extensively funding psychiatric activities, with the APA's revenue doubling from $10.5 million in 1980 to $21.4 million in 1987. The organization openly called pharmaceutical companies our partners in industry. This alliance created an environment where pharmaceutical companies marketed psychiatric drugs using deceptive practices. Despite clinical trials showing only modest benefits and concerning side effects, drug-funded researchers presented a dramatically different picture in medical journals, while media amplified these claims with headlines like Prozac, a breakthrough drug for depression. Despite this bleak picture, promising alternatives offer better outcomes with fewer risks. In Western Lapland, Finland, open dialogue therapy has transformed psychosis treatment. Since 1992, no first-episode psychotic patient has become chronically hospitalized. 84% return to work or school, only 20% take antipsychotics, and new schizophrenia cases have dropped 90%. For depression, exercise has proven remarkably effective. Britain's NHS now advises against antidepressants for mild depression, instead prescribing structured exercise programs. Studies show 70% of depressed patients respond within 6 weeks, with only 8% relapsing compared to 30% in medication-only groups. The path forward requires courage from patients, families, clinicians, and policymakers to question entrenched practices despite powerful financial interests. It means embracing evidence-supported approaches that may seem counterintuitive in a medication-focused culture, Most importantly, it demands honesty about what we know and don't know about mental distress. The epidemic of mental illness in America isn't inevitable. It's the product of specific choices about how we understand and treat human suffering. Different choices, guided by better science and greater humility, could dramatically improve outcomes for millions currently trapped in a system that may be creating the very conditions it claims to cure.